runasradio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 287 with guest Mark Manassi, recorded Monday, October 15th, 2012. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks so much for listening to Run As Radio. This is an odd show because I'm in the middle of the road trip and actually recording from a hotel room in Rochester, New York. If you haven't looked at the road trip yet, it's at .netrocks.com/roadtrip.spx. We're going to 37 cities across the U.S. with two stops in Canada. We're maybe a third of the way through at this particular juncture. And my guest today is Mark Manassi, who is not on the road trip, but you do your own road trips anyway, don't you?
I do, as a matter of fact. You know, 2012 has been so exciting. Server 2012 has been so exciting. And, you know, I just playing with the betas, but getting my hands on the RTM was just fantastic. And I thought, let me get out, start talking about it as soon as possible, which is crazy. Sure. I mean, the fact is that I will sell more classes next year than I do this year because people are still saying, forget about it. We can't get R2 done. But the initial response has been fantastic. The only bad news is, you'll know this, you've known me for a long time, for nearly 30 years when a new operating system comes out, I can do a pretty intensive, this is what's new, this is what you need to know, this is how to make it work in 2 days. Right. All throughout 2012, I kept thinking in the back of my head, I wonder if I can do it, and sure enough, I wasn't. I've got a three-day class. I've got to teach you 2 days. Now, I've promised two-day classes till the end of the year, but as of January, it's going to three.
You need another day. So much it's great that stuff. Much stuff.
I mean, it's like, I remember back in like the early 80s when the PC came out, and I'd worked with microcomputers for 10 years beforehand, but still, you know, it was just one of those cases where there was a big enough market that there was tons of freeware and shareware. And now and then you get this disk from the user group with like 500 shareware programs, and you just sit there and play with them. Just some of them were junk. Many were junk. Some were really cool. Some were like, oh, how have I lived without you, baby? And 2012's got so much stuff in it that it feels like that.
So it's all love all the time, right? You're happy, happy, happy with the product?
Well, you know, Richard, I'd like to say that because, honestly, I know that a lot of the world are version skippers. And there's a lot of folks that skipped all the way from 2003 to 08 R2. I totally respect that because Microsoft's biggest competition, you may argue the point, but I would argue the server space is itself. 2003 is really a fantastic tool, and one could live their lives without it, you know. But 08 R2 is just so neat that it was, you know, it's a good one to jump into. And I know there's a lot of people that are halfway through, or they've got everything set up, and they're just about to pull the trigger. And I want them to come to class and say, do what I did. you remember talking with me about this. My web server is a 2003 server because I was waiting for R2. And then I was just about ready. And last September, they showed us 2012. I was like, oh, crap. So it's still a 2003 web server because I was waiting. And now I've got the hardware sitting there. And I want a lot of people, you know, I work for Microsoft. I'm not trying to sell it to people. Mm-hmm. But 2012, if you're pulling the trigger on an R2 deployment, look at 2012. Get it checked out because there's some solid stuff. However, having said that, I don't want to say the honeymoon's over.
Okay.
But you know how you meet somebody great and they're kind of fantastic and all those kinds of things. And then, you know, you move in and you find out that she leaves a lot of stuff in the sink and she snores at night. And 2012 is a little of that, but yes. I've had some good news, though, from the beginning, because so I was playing around. Because this thing is so big, I've set myself to teaching one course about every 10 days, so I have time to go back and throw away the PowerPoint and rebuild it and add new stuff, and it's gone from like 300 slides for 2 days to about 489 slides for the ones I'll be doing in Seattle a week from today. And, that's going to be stressful. But, I was thinking, there's a million new PowerShell commands. And so part of what I'm doing is my classes is saying, okay, PowerShell's not that bad. Trust me, you're going to love it. It's worth the effort. And I got some examples. And I was looking for a killer example. I've got some good ones. But how about this one? We've got an old friend, you and I, ipconfig. We've known ipconfig for decades.
Yep.
It's a good buddy, but, you know, recently, our old buddy's gotten a little, well, old and soul, like many of us, it's got a little thicker around the middle, you know. And now you do an IP config. Now, remember when IP config, you could have two NICs in a computer, do IP config slash all, and it would fit on a screen.
Yep, two NICs. That's, boom,
those
done.
Those days are gone forever, my friend. I mean,
oh, my goodness. Yeah, you're so right about that.
Like, I got three NICs on this one computer, and between the tunnel adapters and the other stuff, it's 2.5 pages. And I know I'm not the only one, Richard, because for 6 years I've been making a joke that we need an IP config slash no BS option, and I always get a lot of laughs. Well, I looked at all of the net-related stuff in PowerShell. Do a get command on get-net star, and holy guacamole, it's a lot of stuff.
Really? I mean, like way more than IP config.
You know what? It's given us stuff that we've always needed, Richard, and we could do if we wanted to hack the registry, put on the coal miner helmet. I mean, for example, how do you tell an 0802 box, stop talking SMB1? Well, you know, a page and a half of knowledge base article later, right now it's just set-SMB server configuration, and there's, I mean, it's just so cool. So I thought, now, wait a minute, maybe, and so I started mapping out what I wanted, a sleek, trimmed down IP config. I wanted IP config to enjoy what I've enjoyed, having lost 75 pounds.
Yes.
And so I found that 7 different commandlets and a couple of environment variables would do most of what I needed. So I sat down, and I have never written a non-trivial PowerShell script before. I understand scripting. I know 50 languages, you know, stuff like that. But, I mean, I've never actually built a PowerShell commandlet.
Okay.
And so I thought, let's not just make the script, let's make a commandlet. I'm not lying to you, Richard, when I say that not last Saturday, but Saturday before, I started working on this at 6 in the morning, and by 10 in the morning, I had a working prototype. Let's be clear, another 5 hours to get it pretty. But I have a module called get-ipinfo. It's beautiful. It looks just like a PowerShell command. And all I did was this script goes out, and it just grabs these little get-net somethings, plucks the important data into variables, and then from there it's just a question of write-host commands. And I even tweaked it up so it looks the same as ipconfig. I haven't released it yet. I'm going to have a newsletter. I wanted to release today. I guess get it done tomorrow. But do be sure to check it out. And I want everybody to read that. And because I want you to see that, you know, I'm not a genius at this stuff. And I built a non-trivial, useful application. I'm not putting this on every one of my computers, and people are like, how do I get that?
Yeah, no, it sounds like something I want right now.
Absolutely, my friend, and I will get it to you just as soon as I get that gosh darn newsletter out.
Yes.
So that's the good news. That's the good news, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the bad news. Some of the bad news is, man, you could tell they rushed this out, because it is about, I want to say, 13 months almost to the day that you and I were in Anaheim at Build, sitting in your room doing a run as about what's cool with Server 2012, and we were like, you know, man, this stuff is brand new. Nobody's ever seen it, except like I got to see it a little earlier just because I was a journalist like a week before.
Right.
And, man, and they kind of shoved it out the door, and there's, you could tell, because the documentation is really uneven.
Wow.
Storage spaces. Have you looked at storage spaces at all? I know you're a busy guy because all the .NET things are changing.
Sure. No, but and storage space is something I absolutely want to focus on. I have every intent to build a dedicated machine for that, but I haven't done it yet. That's my Christmas project.
And you should. So for everybody in the crowd, if your company has a SAN, some kind of storage area network, what's the whole point of a SAN? The whole point of a SAN, the first time I heard this described in 1998, was let's take all the storage. And you know how there's a little plug in your wall for power and there's a plug in your wall for the network? Let's put a third plug in the wall for data.
Nice.
And, of course, behind the wall, you know, pay no attention to men behind the curtain, there's zillions of just regular old SAS and SATA drives with a bunch of technology around them. And so, you know, you throw, I'm making this up, 16 SATA 3 drives in some box. It's got a SAS, that's high-speed SCSI for those who don't know, cable coming out, or maybe two or three or four of them. You plug them into, you know, a computer, and the computer does some magic. And so it's not 20 drives, it's not 16 drives, whatever the heck it is anymore. It's a big blob of data. And you can reach in and carve out any pieces that you like. So even though under the hood, it's 12, 16, 20, 24 drives, it just looks like big blobs, maybe 16 terabytes. Mm-hmm. And somebody has an application where they need, let's say, 200 gigabytes. No worries. You go to a GUI or something like that, you carve out 200 gigabytes, and you can now present this across the network as an imaginary drive. It's almost like you went to Worst Try, and you actually bought a drive, and you popped it into your computer.
Nice.
So, you know, It's and the buzzword for that is LUN, logical unit number, which makes no sense at all unless you used to put parallel SCSI devices together back in the 80s. So, you know, just everyone trust me. And, of course, to make things complicated, half the world calls them virtual disks,
yep,
which is really confusing. The other half calls it LUNs, but I'm going to say LUNs. And so the beauty is that we've separated the computing from the storage. And again, yep, this is not a new idea. I'm not telling you anything that we couldn't have talked about in 2004.
Sure.
But what's different now is if you wanted to go buy one of those boxes, let's say that Campbell and Associates needs 16 terabytes for their many database projects, you might decide to go out and get yourself a SAN. That ain't going to be cheap.
Nope. NetApp, EMC, these are not inexpensive products.
Worth every penny. But, man, it's a lot of money. What Microsoft's done is Microsoft has said, go out and buy yourself one of those cheap boxes that you can stick 16 SATA drives in. That box is going to be maybe $600, $700,
$800. Mm-hmm.
Plug that into a gray box, beige box you bought at Walmart. Run storage spaces, and now the magic happens. With storage spaces, you can take, and really Microsoft's targeting 30 drives. They're saying, go get 30 physical drives. You don't have to have that many, but it'll handle them. Make it into a blob, carve them out, present them across a particular standard called iSCSI. Don't worry about that if the crowd doesn't know what it is. And so, we could do this kind of stuff. And instead of it being $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, I mean, what I just described to you, an 8-drive bay with, 8 drives and a computer and a license, you're probably probably get that done for $4,000, something mm-hmm. like that. And real, and decent performance. The weird part about it, though, is when you've got one of these guys, you take these drives and you know they're going to fail. That's the whole point of this, right? Is that, we're spending nothing. I mean, when you compare to what a 40 megabyte mainframe disk pack would have been in 1982, this is peanuts.
Yes.
But we want reliability. And how do we do that? Well, RAID is nice and everything, but it's not the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
And here, what's interesting is that we're actually building a system where we're assuming that there will be failure, but we want to make it easy. So the notion is you get this big pile of drives, and you can pull them out while they're running, hot swap, plug new ones in. Again, not a new concept,
nope,
but new to Windows. And so we got to know things, what happens if a drive fails? Do I have to intervene? What do I have to do? What if I want to swap a drive? What do I have to do? Richard, I have spent the last 5 days researching this. There's a sum total of maybe two pages on the web, and one very old document of how to do this stuff, and it's all changed since the beta.
Wow.
So the docs, now again, I wouldn't have wanted them to ship it late because of it, but I wish things were a little more complete. Having said that, what's the good news? What's to love about her in this situation? Hey, the worse Microsoft documents their stuff, the more they need us. Mm-hmm. So, hey, as I always say, if this stuff gets easy, we have to go find jobs, and that would suck.
It's true. Absolutely. I'm just wondering how much of this stuff is going to depend on the hardware. Like, actually having caddies that you can pull drives in and out of live and have the OS react well to that, there are going to be specific specifications for these caddies.
That's a great question. So if you're thinking about buying this stuff, folks, there's a few things to know, okay? First of all, so there's two kinds of drives, SAS drives and SATA drives.
Mm-hmm.
They're very similar hardware-wise. It's just the language you use to talk to them is different. If you're looking at a small or medium-sized operation or you just want to try it out, don't sweat too much which one you're using. I would look, first of all, though, if you do buy that box and it has SATA interfaces, of course it will, the important question is, is it only SATA 2, 3 gigabits per second, or is it SATA 3, 6 gigabits per second?
Mm-hmm.
Very, 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 very important. And that's the number one thing that I've found in shopping for these things. A lot of these boxes do not yet support SATA 3. So SATA 3 is important. That's number one, okay? Number two is, how many interfaces do you have between this box? And again, these are not you're not going to have to mortgage the house. Everything I'm talking about, the deluxe stuff is $850. You can find things in the I just want to screw with it for $350 range or $250
sure.
range. And I don't know if you want to keep them that long, so that might be a bad buy, but it can be done. Second thing is, how's it connected to the computer? And the answer is typically going to be a SAS or a mini SAS. And SAS is just, everybody out there probably remembers that we used to have IDE drives.
Sure.
And then IDE drives, which are also known as ATA drives. Most of us call them IDE, but they were ATA. And they had these big, ugly ribbon cables. Years and years ago, we said, this is nonsense. Let's go to a smaller cable. And that became, instead of parallel IDE, we never called it that, but instead of it being parallel ATA, it was serial ATA. So it was good. It was a change in cables, basically, and that's about it, but it was an important change. They did the same thing with SCSI. Now, I know a smaller percentage of our listeners will have ever have set up a SCSI drive, so let me just say, it's a similar kind of story. I mean, you make a disk spin the same no matter how you make the head actuator move around. The top-level difference between, believe it or not, between SATA and SCSI, and I'm saying that wrong on purpose, is that they both use hardware drives, but they have different command sets. Mm-hmm. So think of the difference between a weak operating system like a tablet operating system, iOS. Compare iOS to macOS Lion. I mean, iOS does a lot less. What it does okay, and it's fine, yep. But it's not as reliable, and it's not as fast. And in the same way, think of, that's the difference between the ATA, which is the language that SATA uses, and SCSI, which is the language that SCSI uses. It's a smarter way of talking, and it's a brighter bunch of hardware.
Yes.
But the hardware is the hardware, you know?
And yeah, so the funny the spinning thing is, media and the heads
hey,
and stuff
Richard,
is still the
what's
same.
Faster? A SATA, I'm sorry. So SAS became serial SCSI. So in the same right. way that SATA was serial ATA, SAS is just, it's just SCSI, but it's another way of cabling. It's a hardware question. If I said to you, hey, Richard, what's faster? What's more reliable, SAS or SATA? Well, most of us would say, well, SCSI. SCSI is, of course, faster. There's no reason for that. It just happens to be that the way the market works is that if I'm a vendor and I'm going to spend a little more money for better electronics, better ball bearings, better cooling, I'm going to say, well, I'll put that on the SATA drives, on the SAS drives, the SCSI drives, because people who buy SAS-type SCSI, well, they're putting stuff in data centers, and they want a good mean time between failure.
Yeah, they care about those things.
I mean, even SATAs nowadays. They've got mean time between failure in the 2.5-3 million hours range.
Sure.
So, you know, we've been making this hardware so long, and I'll get off this in a moment, but we've been making this hardware so long that, you know, I don't think you're a fool if you're building your small or medium-sized data center with SATAs. But anyway, so you get the box. Make sure it's SATA 3. You have a bunch of these slow drives. That's the beauty of this. If I've got 10, 16, 24 slow SATA drives, then it doesn't matter because aggregate, they're going fast. Sure. So again, the SAS connectors, the SCSI type connectors are going to be. And here's a really, 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 really important thing. Oh, and by the way, you asked about hot swap. Hot swap is going to be the case for almost everything nowadays, believe it or not, which is great. Anything over like $200, you have the ability, and you made a great point there, to be able to reach in and pop those drives out. But double check anyway before you buy the thing, you know?
Yep.
Yet another thing is a standard called SES, standard something enclosure. The reason that's important is that this means the computer, it sounds silly, but this means the computer has the ability to reach out and blink the drive light.
Right.
So, see what I'm talking about? So you see 24 drives there, and it says pull out disk 4, and you're like, crap, which one's disk 4? Well, storage space is going to go over and blink that for you. So that's nice. Kind of cool. You just right-click or you can do it from PowerShell. So, I mean, SES isn't an absolute requirement, but it will keep you from tearing your hair out a lot.
And more importantly, yanking the wrong drive out of a live system and possibly taking it out.
Well, that's a good way to test to see how good your your RAID is.
Well, that was the old game with RAID 5, right? It's like, yeah, you can lose one drive and everything will keep functioning. But if you yank the wrong drive out to start recovering, you'll find out you can take your RAID array down.
That's why RAID 6 is better, right. What can I say? Anyway, so absolutely. Here was the big surprise, though. The big surprise was, you know, typically if you're going to buy one of these, and I'll call them inexpensive, because, I mean, really, a box that's $500 will let you, you know, bring 16 terabytes online and connect. It's pretty gosh darn reasonable, you know, when I think that I paid $450 for my first 320 kilobyte floppy drive. And that was back in 81 when money was worth more. Anyway, so that was back when the American dollar was still worth more than the Canadian dollar.
Right now.
Anyway, so RAID upsets it. The whole thing is that storage spaces wants to talk right to the bare metal. It doesn't want to talk to some hardware that's trying to do RAID. So it's interesting. Here's a case where we're saying buy the cheaper box. Don't buy the really sexy box that does 15 kinds of RAID.
But it also means you're going to need some kind of, if you're going to mount 24 drives, you need some place to plug 24 drives into. So, I mean, most motherboards have maybe 8 or 12 ports right on them. You may have to get a controller card, but just more SATA ports, not any kind of hardware RAID.
Okay, so maybe I did a bad job there. I'm assuming you've got a server. Let's be super simple. Let's not even talk about rack mounted. Let's just say that your server is a tower machine. A tower machine is going to have room, for 2-3 drives, something like that. Forget about that. Now, I'm saying this is an external box that kind of looks like a tower computer.
Just a drive box.
And it's got little drawers. And there's a buzzword for this. Okay, there's a buzzword phrase for this. It's called a JBOD device because JBOD stands for just a bunch of drives, just a bunch of disks. And so, again, I've got you know, my server. Maybe it's a rack mounted, you know, 1U, 2U server, something like that. But you're right. I need a place to put these drives. And this is an external box, and it looks very much like an old style tower AT type computer. And it's got those places to slide the drive in. And you see them in 4, 8, 20, 24, 16, those kinds of guys. And what's interesting also is at this point, the SATA drives and the SAS drives can use the same connectors. So another nice feature there is you can buy 24 slots. And if you want to get started, I wouldn't do that for my first one. I'd play with an 8. You know, I mean, it's inexpensive enough to throw it away, or you can make it your second array if you buy another one. And you can start out with some inexpensive SATA drives, and when you like it, and when the whole thing works fine, you say, I'd like a little more oomph. And by oomph, what do I mean? I mean, data transfer rate is going to be a bit better. The mean time between failure is going to be a bit better. It's a thing to think about replacement in the future. But, you know, I'd start off with SATA, as I say. And so you got this box. And, again, if it's on the motherboard, well, it's easy to see how to connect. If drives are, you know, connected inside your chassis, you can see how to connect to the motherboard. How do we do it on the outside? Well, on the outside, in your tower computer or your 1U computer or whatever, you are going to buy some kind of host-based adapter. It's going to be a SAS host-based adapter, and you can spend lots or little on that. You're going to find, though, that it's going to be fairly inexpensive. And the reason is, what don't you want on your SAS controller? You don't want RAID.
Right, which is what generally makes them pricey.
And not only makes them pricey, it makes storage spaces not see it. Mm-hmm. Storage spaces will say, sorry, I don't see that. That's great. That's no good. I don't like that.
No, I just want access to the drives. But there are the SAS concentrator cables allow you to bring, if I'm going between two chassis like that, I can get 4 or 8 drives to a cable. And if I've got an external 24-drive chassis, you don't want 24 cables coming out of that into the other machine. That's a lot of wire.
Right. No, I'm sorry. I thought I made that point, but thanks for bringing that out. Yeah, that's the whole point, is I don't want 24 cables. If I got 24 drives, I don't want 24 cables. What I want is a little bit of electronics in the box that is going to smush these guys all together.
Right.
And that's the beauty of it, because you think about it, you say, well, SATA is so slow, doesn't matter if I've got 4 SATA drives. If they're coming out as 1 cable or maybe 4 cables, then they look like as fast as SAS could be, you know? So the performance is good. You get the hot swappy stuff. The question though is, how good is the software in making our homemade sandbox?
Yeah, because we've always made fun of software based RAID.
You know, we have. But let me give you a little spin on that, Richard. That's a great question, because I'm glad you thought about mentioned that. Because, you know, back when NT 3.1 came around, what did we see? Well, we saw that there was this interesting feature whereby you could hang a bunch of drives in your computer and it would do RAID for you. The CPU would do the RAID for you.
Right.
And it worked. It worked. I mean, I played around with it. Anybody who got certified in the first 3 or 4 or 5 versions of NT needed to know enough about it to pass the test. And, you know, again, RAID was expensive in those days. Buying a RAID controller, holy moly, that was $1,500. So
that's where Adaptec made their money.
Yeah. No, back in the NT 3.5.1 days, I had a server in my enterprise at the time, and it was running software RAID, doing the job for us. Now, we laugh at it now in terms of performance, but let's think about it. Huh. When I bought a server for my NT 3.1 server, what was this processor? Maybe it's 60 megahertz Pentium?
Yeah.
Maybe one of the good ones, the 66?
Yeah.
Well, nowadays, we're running, you know, 1,300 or 3,000 megahertz or something along those lines. So, I mean, we got a lot more power that day. B is, what is a RAID controller? RAID controller is nothing more than a CPU with some software on it.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think the thing we should stop and think about is drives haven't gotten 1,000 times faster.
No.
You know, CPUs have gotten faster.
Yes.
They now have special purpose opcodes. I mean, as you know, modern Pentium chips do crypto, they do matrix operations, all these things in just one opcode.
Mm-hmm.
So if I've got a high enough, you know, speed connection to these drives, and I would, I don't see why a software-based RAID isn't worth a second look.
Yeah, no.
I mean, it may be that 20 years later, a couple things have changed.
Well, we're also getting back to this thing that Microsoft's always done, which is commoditizing these kinds of technologies. They used to be the purview of expensive custom hardware and very carefully configured. I mean, even network cards used to be that way. And now, bit by bit, this is just anything will work. The software will take care of it all.
I remember my first Etherlink 2 card was a $1,100 a card. Had a CPU on it, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe an example that's a little easier for everybody in the audience is, if you've been in the business for a while, think about it 15 years ago, or 10 years ago. 10 years ago, you're buying a computer, it's got a modem. But does it really have a modem? Nah. I mean, we haven't seen modem chips in a million years. What have they been doing for the last 20, something like that, 20, 22 years? Well, what they've been doing is they've been saying, oh, I've got a sound chip right here on the motherboard. We'll just put an RJ13 connector on it. And if you want to dial out, we'll just go, that kind of stuff, you know? So, I mean, basically, you know, the Rockwell modem chips just went away because we said, let's let the CPU do that work. Remember, we had the same thing going on in, I want to say, the early 90s. There was a question of, should we go out and buy a video card that's smart? And Intel had it, had its own special vector graphics chip versus TI's. Oh, yeah. That was the big one. Who's going to be the winner? In the end analysis, though, Microsoft and Intel together said, you know, that's a bad idea. We have a lot of power on this computer. Why don't we let the main CPU do this stuff? Now, that might not have been a good idea in those days. But, I mean, look where it got us. By the time we got back to 2006, everybody's got a graphics processor now. I mean, everybody's a chip either on their motherboard or on a separate card that does 5 zillion triangles per second or something like that. So this is just something that we do. And I apologize for the noise that you guys are getting in the background. I'm guessing that the Navy jets have all focused on the fact. I think they're all run as fans, and so they've been flying overhead.
Excited to do a flyby.
In formation. This is an honor of you, Richard. So, anyway, so this is a tug of war we've seen in mainframes. We've seen it in minis. We'll see it in micros. We'll continue to. It's the whole question of, hey, wait a minute. Is this task small enough that the main CPU can do it, or do I need some help? Here's another example. What kind of hard drives do we see nowadays in the BitLocker world? We're now seeing hard drives that have an encryption chip on them. They've got a CPU that's doing the encryption. Is that a good idea? Is it a bad idea? You know, I've played around with them both, Richard, and the Pentiums in the last, what, 2 or 3 years, I think that's the right number, do crypto on board. So at this point, in my opinion, it's almost a wash. But give it 5 years. Hey, maybe the crypto guys will make even more special ASICs, application-specific integrated chips. And so just remember, when you look, out in the audience, if you're thinking about storage spaces and you're saying, now, wait a minute, isn't that silly software raid we've had? Okay, the bad news is, it is new code, it's a little creaky, and it has been some real effort for me to figure out how to do things. But they can be done. I'll be documenting them. I'm sure way smarter people will be documenting them. And I would say, you know, it's not that expensive. Take some machines, get yourself a JBOD box, plug some of this stuff in, and try it out. I think you may find, A, the performance is great. It's better than you expect, right? And B, I think this is an important thing. You know, let's say we've got Mark and Richard Inc., and we're a, 200-person operation. We can only afford maybe one IT guy, maybe two. So we decide to get a SAN. Oh, okay, it's going to cost $25,000. That's not the end of the world. But then we find out, we got to send our IT guy to SAN school for this particular EMC box or this Dell Compellent box or something like that. Right. And those are all great tools, by the way. I'm not picking on any of those guys. I mean, let's be clear. Windows storage spaces cannot compete with the EMCs and the Equilogix and all that kind of stuff. But it's not trying to. It's trying to basically deliver, you know, 60%, 70% of the performance at about 20% of the price. You know?
Right.
And maybe we're afraid because, I mean, you know, we send this guy off to Equilogix school. Now we can't fire him because he's the only guy in the building that knows how to run the SAN. You got a Windows-based SAN? You know, heck, you're using the management tools you already know. PowerShell, GUIs, group policy.
Well, I think also when you throw in SMB3 and the ability to do NIC bonding, like, why would you even bother with iSCSI anymore? Just make it an SMB target.
That's a great thought, and that's a much longer topic, but in brief. So if you're going to do that, the upside certainly is that SMB3 supports the offload boards, and in particular supports the so-called remote direct memory access boards, some of which, for those who don't know, an RDMA board looks like a NIC, but it's not. It's almost like the world's fastest USB connector.
Right.
And when I say USB connector, what I mean is we're not running TCP on this. We're not running TCP IP on this. We're running some proprietary thing. So I go out and I get a couple of Mellanox boards, and now I can have two computers in my data center talk to each other at 56 gigabits per second. My mouth is watering at the very thought, Richard. But I can't put I can't just put an IP address on these suckers and have them start doing, you know, net uses or laplink, you know. I've got to get something that comes from the vendor. What you're referring to there is that Microsoft created some really cool stuff whereby even though we've got these very proprietary boards, this whole class of RDMA boards, SMB now runs on top of those guys, which is pretty gosh darn impressive.
Right.
Thing to remember, though, is that you do need fast boards. Microsoft's saying, yes, you can now use a file share as a shared storage, but please don't think about it if you're under 10 gigabits per second. So where you and I could hack together a bunch of, you know, 1-2 gigabit connection size SCSI and get a pretty good performance there, if we were going to one of these so-called scale-out file server for applications, application data, even Microsoft is very, very, I mean, it's one of the first things they always say. They don't want anyone trying it on 1 gig and saying, boy, does this run crap? Because their answer is, you know, you're right, it does run crap. We told you not to do it.
Yeah. There was a reason.
Yes. But, you know, really, you're 100% right. Really exciting stuff. The idea that you can not only run the file server and the file server software over non-TCP/IP boards, you know, to run this over the RDMAs, you can also bond them, which is really cool. I mean, you can't, you cannot NIC-team RDMA boards. A lot of people think you can. You can't. But you can team them up way up at the SMB level. And that is really exciting stuff. But, you know, having said that, everyone, let me just say, everyone should look into the iSCSI stuff. It's full-featured, lots of good PowerShell stuff, and well worth taking the time to learn about.
And I also appreciate the idea that you isolate that part of your network, that your storage traffic isn't part of the main traffic. I'm afraid that with the SMB move, everyone's just going to have, they're going to stop VLANing and everything's going to be shared, and I feel for the switches in your life.
No, that's absolutely true. I mean, but again, talk to anyone who's been running a SAN. And I kind of arbitrarily said that I first heard of SANs in 98. Mm-hmm. I first started hitting, you know, walking into them, you know, you can't go into a data center without hitting some of these. I want to say 2004, 2005. And, you know, in the end analysis, if you do have some kind of storage area network that uses an IP-based backbone, I think most folks will tell you that one of the ways they get the performance is, A, they're doing this with 10 gigabit NICs, and the price just went up, you know?
Substantial.
On top of that, got a whole separate set of switches. I mean, typically, if you have 10 gigabit in your data center, you're certainly running 10 gigabit switches for your general traffic, but then the storage traffic often will run on a separate set of switches and NICs.
Yeah, they need to be isolated. 1 gig's just not fast enough for what you're asking it to do.
But to try it out and to get comfortable with it, because again, one of the great, I mean, as you said, the fact that you could do this stuff in software is nice because it means that a hobbyist or someone in their house or, you know, someone just trying to polish their skills and try to keep them, you know, learn some new IT skills. Because I've been hearing, this is good news, I've been hearing from a lot of my friends that are IT pros that the headhunters are out, that activity's starting to occur again. And so, I mean, here's a great opportunity to learn some new technologies, and all you need is the 180-day evaluation copy, which is free of Server 2012 and a few boxes to play with.
Well, and again, it gives us real gradual. We can start with sort of basic performance and add and add and add. We don't have to make these big jumps until we could clearly prove we need them.
100% right. And not only that we need them, that we're comfortable with it.
We know how to use it.
As I said, love storage spaces, but there's times that times it's tough love. There's some yelling. There's some bad words allowed.
Yeah, very challenging.
Hey, another thing, too. Do we have time for one more tip?
Hit me.
If you're installing server, there's a whole bunch of basic stuff you've got to do to get server started. You've got to give it a name and things like that. And that's a bit of a pain in the neck. Even worse, though, they decided that if you're playing around with the MSDN version of server, for example, it won't let you go anywhere without punching in a product key. Now, I don't like that because I can't use clipboard. I can't. I got to punch the stupid thing in. There's no way to cut and paste it. Rah, 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 rah. The answer is a relatively old answer. In 2006, Microsoft introduced the idea of the Windows System Image Manager. It builds a large XML file, and the notion is, so what I do is when I'm going to build servers, and I've built a lot of them, I don't have to type that thing. I've built this XML file, and all it has to do is I can sit on the same disk as the server installation files, and the server will see there's a magic name, auto-unattend.xml, and as long as you get that file set up, then I've got about 8 things that I pre-build, and that just makes my life so much easier just banging out servers. Yes, of course, I could use MDT. Yes, of course, I could use Config Manager.
Yep. Config Man actually uses MDT under the hood anyway.
Right. No, exactly. But you can do sexier stuff when you lay Config Man on top of MDT. But this is really the poor man or poor woman's way to do it. And I wrote about this back in, I want to say 06, in one of my newsletters. So on my site, newsletter number 60 gives you some examples. It's an example of how to do an unattended installation of Vista. But all the advice works exactly the same if you're talking about doing an unattended installation of Server 2012. So do give that a shot. And that's on my site at www.manassi, that's MINASI.com, where you can also find out about some amazing 2012 seminars coming to a town near you.
Soon to be 3 days instead of 2.
Soon to be 3 days. I've made a deal, though, with the people cited for the 2-day. Mm-hmm. Since I'm packing their heads full of stuff and their ears will be bleeding, that anybody who takes the 2-day class will have lifetime ability to take the 3-day class at half price.
Nice. It's a fair deal because it's a big commitment and it's so much stuff. I'm having a great time with 2012.
It seems like the only way to do it. Yes, indeedy.
Mark, always a pleasure to talk to you, sir. Thank you so much.
You too, Richard. Take care of yourself. I know you're pretty busy there on the road.
are having a lot of fun, and we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.